From Vermont Public, this is The Frequency. I'm Liam Elder Connors.
And I'm Anna Van Dyne. It's Friday, March 17th. Here are today's headlines.
The Scott administration has awarded the first round of community revitalization grants funded by the American Rescue Plan Act. 31 projects in 12 counties will share $10 million in funding. Awardees include Moe Moulton, who runs a child care center in Waitsfield. She says the $468,000 her company is getting will allow it to double capacity.
And in a county where there are over 1,100 slots needed for infant through preschool age children to meet the demand for child care, we will be able to provide 125 slots.
The state says the 31 grant projects announced this week are projected to create about 200 new jobs, 79 affordable housing units, and 200 new child care slots.
Meanwhile, in the legislature, the Vermont House of Representatives is poised to approve legislation that would create a 72-hour waiting period for gun purchases. The bill would also require gun owners to keep their firearms securely stored when not in use. Essex Junction Representative Lori Houghton says the measures are part of an effort to reduce suicide deaths in Vermont.
You know, losing 142 individuals in the most recent year that we have data, when they're preventable, is really unacceptable when it comes to healthcare.
Gun rights advocates say a decision last year by the U.S. Supreme Court has upended precedent around state gun laws. And they say if the waiting period and safe storage provisions are enacted into law, they won't survive a constitutional challenge.
In the Senate, lawmakers are working on a bill that would ban a suite of chemicals from menstrual products and cosmetics. That includes so-called forever chemicals, or PFAS. They don't break down in the natural environment, and they've been linked to serious health issues. Attorney General Charity Clark told lawmakers on Thursday that she supports the bill, which goes further than some larger states' regulations.
We know that this is a toxin. If we have a value of protecting people, it's okay to be on the vanguard and know that other states are probably close behind.
Clark's office would play a big enforcement role if the ban goes into effect. The bill also includes new restrictions on PFAS in clothing and in artificial turf. This week, federal regulators announced plans for strict limits on the forever chemicals in public drinking water.
And the city of St. Albans has its first cannabis dispensary. Mutha Plant, owned and operated by Anthony and Ashley Sorrentino, opened last Saturday. It's the second dispensary to open in Franklin County. The shop features different strains of cannabis flower as well as edibles. The owners hope to branch out and make their own line of edibles at the dispensary in the future, according to the St. Albans Messenger.
Coming up, an investigation into the state's motel housing program. More after this.
Thanks for tuning in to The Frequency, and thanks to VITA for their support. VITA, celebrating 50 years of helping Vermont businesses grow and thrive. From agriculture to energy, startups to established companies, find solutions that fit your business. Visit VEDA.org to start your next chapter.
Early in the pandemic, the state government set up a federally funded program to provide motel and hotel rooms to Vermonters experiencing homelessness. Between March 2020 and December of last year, the state paid out more than $160 million to shelter thousands of vulnerable residents.
But many of those tenants have flagged abysmal conditions in their motel rooms. And advocates are concerned that under the program, there hasn't been nearly enough state oversight or protections for renters. VT Digger reporter Lola DeFore just finished an investigation into the state's motel housing program, and she joined her colleague Mary Engish to share more on her reporting.
Lola, some of the details in your piece are pretty harrowing. What are we seeing with the condition of some of the motel rooms being provided through this program?
Yeah, I guess repeated themes that I saw were, you know, pest infestations, especially bed bugs that were not adequately addressed. And that would go on for months and months and months. Another common problem was doors not locking properly and that not being fixed. And obviously that's, you know, a huge safety concern. Mold, plumbing problems. And that's on top of like more mundane, but, you know, also problematic stuff like not, you know, providing clean sheets on a regular basis, not providing the same sorts of services that would traditionally be offered to, you know, privately paying guests.
And can tenants, if there are things like maintenance issues that you're describing, can they reach out to get those addressed? And if so, what's the record on the success rate there?
Yeah, so tenants can reach out. There is an online complaint form with VDH that they can fill out. Many have. And VDH does follow up, sometimes quickly, and sometimes aggressively. In fact, I mean, a lot of my reporting was based on Vermont Department of Health, you know, inspection records, which went in and then corroborated many of the complaints filed by residents and caseworkers. However, doing so, you know, exposes complainants to retaliation, and there is not really much protecting them if a motel manager or owner then wants to evict them. And, you know, in one case in Brattleboro, for example, a caseworker filled out the form and reported problems throughout the establishment. VDH didn't follow up for months. And then when they did, they didn't inspect individual rooms. And when I asked them why, they said, well, you know, no individual rooms were named in the complaint and there were no vacancies. But of course, if the complainants had named individual rooms, then that would have tipped off the motel owner about, you know, who had decided to speak out. You know, there's a conflict between the vulnerability of the people who are in these motels and the processes that are there ostensibly to protect them. And I think that that's because, you know, the system that exists was set up for the traveling public, right? So if you're just a random tourist who walks into a hotel room and finds filthy conditions, you're not risking much if the day after you check out, you complain to VDH about what was there. But if this is your only source of housing, you know, then that process doesn't really work for you.
In your story, you mentioned the state has had other motel housing programs over the years where conditions have also been problematic. But it seems like the influx of federal money with the pandemic really brought things to another scale. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think Vermont has long relied on motels and hotels to provide emergency shelter. It just used to rely on them a lot less. There were similar conditions reported on about this program like 10 years ago. And what we're paying for has never really been explored, right? The conversation has always been, do we shut this program down? Do we keep it going? And not, do we make sure that the people who are relying on this for emergency housing are consistently getting safe and sanitary and dignified housing? Lawmakers in Montpelier are debating, you know, whether or not to ramp down this program now that federal funds are running low. But there's also this recognition that we are going to keep relying on this to a pretty large degree. You know, the most conservative proposal out there, which has been put forward by the Scott administration, would basically rely on hotels to provide large amounts of emergency shelter in the winter months, right? So even if we go with kind of the most conservative option, we're still going to be spending a lot of money in these hotels because there are basically no other options right now when it comes to emergency shelter.
And on the other side of this is the state of Vermont. What has the state government been paying for these motel rooms?
Now there is a cap, but there wasn't for a very long time. And the cap was put in place last year, basically when the state realized that we were quickly running out of this federal money. But before then, there was none. And hotels could basically name their price. Some of them asked for as high as, you know, $6,000 or $8,000 a month for a room, which is a lot more than I'm paying in rent.
As you just mentioned, federal money for this motel program, it's set to run dry at the end of the month. What's next for these tenants, especially in the immediate short term?
I'm hearing a lot of panic, right? Because this is a very problematic program, but it's also the only thing that a lot of people have right now. There is a spending package that is on the governor's desk that could be signed or vetoed any day that basically extends emergency housing as is through May 31st. The big question is whether or not that will get signed, right? Because otherwise, lots of people will be on the street as soon as March 31st, which is, you know, in just a matter of weeks. But if that does get signed, then the question is what happens afterwards. You know, it's very unclear what happens afterwards. This is the subject of ongoing debate in Montpelier.
That was VT Digger reporter Lola Dufour speaking with Mary Engish.
Thanks for listening to The Frequency today. We had additional reporting from Abigail Giles, Karen Anderson, and Peter Hirschfeld.
Our executive producer is Mark Davis, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Anna Van Dyne.
And I'm Liam Elder Connors. Talk to you on Monday.
Every episode of Brave Little State begins with a question about Vermont that's been submitted and voted on by listeners like you. What happened to all the restaurant workers? What's the deal with Vermont's fire towers? Why do people like the band Phish? Follow Brave Little State wherever you get podcasts. From Vermont Public, part of the NPR network.